Hey there, Tech Intersect listeners. Have you ever encountered naysayers claiming crypto is too volatile, a total scam, or a hacker's paradise? Well, it's time to dispel these persistent myths and reveal the truth. It's exactly why I wrote Digital Money Demystified, available now wherever books are sold. And this book is your golden ticket from being crypto curious to radiating crypto confidence. Navigate the crypto world with clarity and conquer the chaos. Get your copy today to learn about my journey, separate fact from fiction, and maybe even embark on a transformative journey yourself. Don't stop there. Enhance your learning experience exponentially. Join the DMD Insiders Membership Club. It's a gateway to premier coaching, engaging community, and unparalleled content that complements the insights in the book. Together, we'll unlock the potential of digital money and stride confidently into the future. Visit digitalmoneydemystified.com, grab your guide to the crypto universe, and become an esteemed member of our Insiders Club. Let's decode the digital dollar and invest in your crypto-savvy future right now.
How y'all doing? Charles J. Kelly with you, also known as CJ the Smart Guy. I'm a CPA, and we're over here with Professor Tanya with Tech Intersect. When it comes to stocks, by the time that we are able to invest into it, there have already typically been multiple rounds of investments that have come out. And legally, unless you are an accredited investor, you cannot get into stocks at a certain round. Basically, it's like, hey, you could get in only if you have a certain amount of money. And it's one of those things where it's like, well, if you have taken the wealth from our communities and now you're saying it's equal, which it is outside of you have to be an accredited investor, why would you make that law? And they say, well, it's to protect you. And so crypto came out and crypto was like, look, everybody can get on the ICO. Everybody can get in at the very beginning. And so you saw a huge amount of people, Black people that got into it and make a ton of money.
Welcome to Tech Intersect. I'm your host, Tanya Evans, and my life and work exist at the heart of law, business, and technology. Yeah, I've earned a few fancy titles and degrees over the years, but the bottom line is I'm a writer, speaker, teacher, and lifelong learner. And I'm really excited that you've joined me on this journey. So what is Tech Intersect? Well, it's authentic, empowering conversations with really interesting guests who demystify complex topics to prepare you for the future, because your future is now, and it exists where law, business, and tech intersect. Get ready to listen, learn, and leverage. Let's get started. Hey, everybody. Welcome to the Tech Intersect podcast, where we delve into the intersections of technology, law, and innovation, illuminating the path forward in the digital age. Today, we are joined by Charles J. Kelly, better known as CJ the Smart Guy, a dynamic CPA who's turned his expertise towards the burgeoning field of cryptocurrency taxes from a view and lens of empowerment. And with a rich background in finance and accounting and a passion for financial education, CJ has rapidly become a go-to authority on navigating the complex waters of crypto taxation. Definitely my go-to for sure. And from touring the country with crypto pioneers, shout out to Naja, to founding Smart Guy Taxes, CJ is on a mission to demystify crypto taxes for the community. Today, we will talk about the evolving world of money, how to stay compliant in the crypto space. That may take 100 hours, but we'll see. We will talk about all of that and more in a moment. But first, CJ, welcome.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Absolutely. All right. So before we get into the wild, wonderful world of taxes, share a bit about the moment or the insight that propelled you from a career in corporate America, both have been there, to focusing specifically on cryptocurrency and crypto taxes, or the taxation of crypto assets, and certainly starting Smart Guys Taxes?
That's actually a really deep question.
Okay.
there were three people that really motivated me to leave corporate America. I'll say the instance was, you know, I was looking through the financials and I saw what I knew what I made. And then I saw what, you know, some of the executives made. Mm-hmm. And when I saw that the executives were making my yearly salary every single day, meaning 365 times more than what I was making.
Right.
I was like, you know, this is terrible, but I didn't really have the motivation to leave yet, even though I knew in my mind it was going to happen. It wasn't until Sandra Bland passed away. That was a trigger. I was working at Fort Worth, Texas, and I had gone to school in Houston, Texas. And I had originally had a California car coming from California. And in Texas, you get pulled over a lot if you have out-of-state tags. I found out years later that if you're California, Illinois, Florida, they will pull you over because those are known drug trafficking states. And so I had California plates. I'd been pulled over, I mean, at least 30 times at that moment. And when I heard what happened with Sandra Bland, she had the Chicago, Illinois plates. I was like, oh, I felt that before. I've been in that same situation. And to feel what, how the officers did that, you know, I just felt like that was terrible. And so I watched all her videos, created a scholarship for her, met her family, did a whole bunch of stuff at Prairie View. And I was like, look, she left her job in order to help out her community. She was unable to actually do it in person, but through her videos, it sparked like a movement, especially with me. And I was like, you know what? I'm going to carry that torch. I didn't appreciate how that happened from start to finish. I had the motivation. So I had the idea I was going to leave from seeing the money. I got the motivation from her. And then it was like, well, how do I do this? And so there was two main people, Nipsey Hussle, as well as Dr. Boyce Watkins. I looked at them as like my mentors. And so Dr. Boyce Watkins, he was always talking about getting off the corporate plantation. And then Nipsey was always talking about, like, you know, not having a boss, a slave to having a boss, making moves on your own. Mm. And so I followed Nipsey's blueprint while at the same time listening to Dr. Boyce Watkins. Dr. Boyce Watkins led me to Lamar Wilson.
Mm-hmm.
Lamar Wilson is a Bitcoiner. I started watching him when he was doing Coinda. And Nipsey was talking about Bitcoin and cryptocurrencies. And so I left my job in 2016. Started growing my hair immediately. In 2017 is when I started getting into crypto, blockchain, and started studying. Got my license June 2020. So
amazing. I feel like I met you around that time. My entry point into the crypto ecosystem was at the end of 2017. And my rabbit hole moment really took me into the intersection of my expertise, intellectual property, with blockchain. Before, it was a weird time. It was blockchain, not Bitcoin, that kind of blasphemy. And I think it was on the heels of the initial coin offering or ICO boom. And there was a lot going on, probably a lot of unregistered securities. And so the environment at the time was focused on the underlying technology until we figure out these cryptographically secured assets, right? And I'm a lawyer. I'm licensed to practice in 4 states. I am curious. I'm intellectually curious, but I'm also quite cautious and trained in risk aversion, for sure, and issue spotting, de-risking, and all of that. So I wasn't sure about what crypto would mean for me personally as an investor and the ways that in which it can change your life as a method of economic justice and empowerment, and we'll get to that. But I was focused on the intersection of the work that I was doing, and to your point, how to continue to make that relevant in the legal world for my law students to be conversant and prepared for the folks who are building in what we now call Web3. But I quickly learned, and I'd like to hear your experience with it, that you can't learn at a distance, that the only way is to, in some sense, you know, look under the hood, understand the reason why, so that you can understand the potential and the opportunities. And then you get to navigate the rules and the laws or the absence, you know, the kind of the uncertainty. What was it about the place in the space listening to the great prophet Nipsey? And I don't know Mr. Watkins, but certainly know of him and know that he was kind of an early adopter and champion of the space. Did you have any reservations? And if so, how did you navigate those to align your education and your expertise now in taxation and as a CPA with maybe just your humanness about what the risks might be and how to navigate that?
Are you tired of feeling lost in the world of trading and investing? Get informed and inspired with the Talking Trading podcast. I'm Louise Bedford, and I'll help you navigate the markets like a pro. Tune in each week and subscribe now at talkingtrading.com.au or on your favorite podcast app, or check out the link in the show notes. Talking Trading, this is how traders excel.
Like you said, it's just sometimes you just got to go out there and get your hands dirty. Mm. Nipsey, Dr. Boyce Watkins, as well as myself, like when you look at the original videos and the original things we were saying, all of us took some L's in the beginning. Like all of us were just trying it out, but we all had that foresight that, oh, this is going to grow eventually. And so for me personally, I didn't really have a whole bunch of money at the time anyway. I quit my job in 2016. It had been about a year studying for the CPA. Not working, my money was getting low. So it wasn't like I had a whole bunch of money to waste in the first place. I would say when I started to research the technology, I realized, oh, this is going to automate my job. When you digitize money, then there's no real point for a bookkeeper to keep track of all the transactions because it's going to be done automatically on the blockchain. And then when you look at a central bank digital currency, then there's no need for tax preparation because the taxes, everything can be done digitally automatically. And so I was like, well, this technology is about to automate my entire profession.
Right.
So what I did was I actually texted all the CPAs, all my accounting friends, let them all know. I was like excited. I was like, hey, y'all, look, if we can get ahead of this technology, we're going to be way ahead of everybody. And nobody really listened to me. I was like, they're just like, okay. Get your license first. Like, we know you're excited. Like, nobody really took me serious. I was kind of like, well, if that's the case, I just got to show and prove. And so I just kept studying simultaneously crypto as well as taxes. And I'll say when Nipsey created Vector 90 in 2018, when I started going there and he was talking about connecting the LA inner city with Silicon Valley, immediately, I went up to Silicon Valley. I went to UC Berkeley, met up with some people, random. Like, I just went up there. I was, social media. I was talking to people, literally just drove up there, networked with some people. And I wound up taking a online class at UC Berkeley and learned about some of the real back end stuff that if you learn from one or two people, you might be confused. They might have their biases, especially back then before it was like, as mainstream. It's not even mainstream yet, but it was definitely not mainstream back then. So that class helped break a lot of stuff down to me and I understood it. And I was like, oh, this is bigger than anybody's even projecting. This is why I can't explain it. This is why they're calling me crazy. Mm-hmm. And I was like, you know what? That's fine. I'll be that guy. Like, I'm paying attention. And so the number one business model I looked at was the distributed ledger technology. One thing that Nipsey had did in 2013 was he had sold his album for $100, Crenshaw, because the record labels were losing money from CD sales because everybody was going to Kazaa, LimeWire, Napster, which had distributed ledger technology. So instead of you going to the music store, you could just download it for free. And I'm like, well, that's the same technology as money. So why would anybody go to an accountant? Why would anybody go to a CPA to do taxes when it can just be done distributed ledger-wise on the blockchain? Right. And so I just followed his business model, went directly peer-to-peer with people. I was like, I'm going to go on tour. I'm going to talk to people. I'm going to network with people because I want to be able to transact peer-to-peer, just like it talks about in the Bitcoin white paper. Without a middleman, go directly to your peers. And so they both had the same motto, and I just ran with it.
Yeah, I feel the same way from a legal perspective, right? And when I think of smart contract technology, which automates performance of things, and I was excited about the places and spaces as an attorney where if you have some type of if-then moment, that you automate that, that you make things better, faster, more secure, verifiable. The fact of we don't have to quibble about what a fact is because the state of transactions at any given time, we have this agreement. It was like brilliant to me. It's just, and this is coming from someone who is tech adjacent, right? I'm not a coder and all of those other things, but could so clearly see from an intellectual property point of view when I think about the base layers with open source software, when I think of the automation that removes the input of gatekeepers. Oftentimes from a systemic point of view, they keep Black and brown folks on the side. It's a feature, not a bug. And how to evolve to a system where we have a say in terms of sovereignty and privacy and how you can wield power from that point of view. And it seems so clear to me, but it seems to be such a struggle with my colleagues. And perhaps you are still today in 2024 having the same conversations with CPAs and financial professionals about how important this is and how professionals don't have the luxury of time to sit on the sidelines. And so I'm wondering if you feel like you're, and maybe not, because I know you're proactive. You're like, I'm about that life. I'm moving forward. If you don't get it, can't save everybody, yeah. Right? As Sojourner, we literally cannot save everybody. And yep. You might get taken out if you try and mess it up for the rest of us, right? So we don't condone violence. This was an historical thing. This is Black History Month. So I'm just wondering if you still with professionals are coming up against resistance. How do you make sense of it in order to prepare those who are willing to move forward? And by those, I mean those professionals.
Like I said, I sent that text message out to everybody I knew because I understood it way back in like 2017. So this was like we're in 2024. This was 7 years ago. First, I told my peers. They didn't really listen. Told family members, small percentage, friends, small percentage. And then I was like, well, you know, nobody's really listening to me. And I originally, I thought I was the only like Black American in the space outside of maybe a Nipsey or maybe a Dr. Boyce Watkins or maybe a Lamar. But it was like such a small amount of people compared to, you know, the whole space. And so it wasn't until Lamar and Isaiah Jackson came out with the Black Bitcoin Billionaires on Clubhouse. And then all of a sudden I was on Clubhouse and I met all these people. It felt like the Avengers, like, oh, this is the dream team.
Right. We're on this.
Man. And it just felt like this is awesome. Like, I don't have to know everything. You know, you got Lamar on the tech side. You got Charlene doing international stuff. You got Naj, the actual physical, like cryptocurrency exchange. It was like Zay had ATM. So for me, it was like, whoa, this is like a new introduction into the game. And so when Naja announced that she was going to go on tour, I was like, okay, cool. Let me do that because people don't understand. The year before that, I had gone on my own. I just drove around from city to city, but I wasn't really linked in with the culture. Right. So it wasn't a tour. I call it a road trip. But it was like I had gone to a lot of different places. I actually made a podcast on it, but the audio was so terrible that I yanked it off because it was horrible. I didn't know what I was doing. It was my first run with everything. After I went on tour a couple times, I'll say in 2022, you know, a whole bunch of stuff started cracking down mm-hmm. on my circle. You know, Naj didn't go on the tour in 2023. A lot of different small things happened. You know, Black Wall Street Wallet, due to trust, they were the custodial. Prime Trust, they lost the keys. So the Black Wall Street went out. Dr. Boyce Watkins, the Black Crypto Club, stopped, you know, talking about crypto. So it was like, oh, you're seeing everybody around you start to like not be as involved for whatever reasons. And so it was like, okay, this is a signal to me. I need to just focus on what I'm focused on because they're all intelligent. They're all business owners. Don't think that, you know, more than them. Be humble. Take a step back. And so I've just been focused mostly on, you know, building my brand, building my business, because when that bull run comes, I want to make sure that my team is strong enough to be able to service everybody. And then on top of that, I just want to make sure that if there's any like adversaries or anything like that. Like certain returns now, people getting audited, their CP2000 letters coming out. So now I just want to make sure I have that team extremely strong. So, you know, I might go on a podcast to talk about it, but at this point, I'm more focused on building my brand. I feel like I've traveled, I've done podcasts,
right?
I've texted,
done all the conferences,
right? I've gone to conferences. It's time for me to just build, you know, what I got built already and expand on it.
You love listening to podcasts, but have you ever thought about starting your own podcast? Maybe you want to build a brand, grow your business, or are looking for an excuse to talk about your favorite hobby. Whatever your reason for making a podcast, Buzzsprout is the place to start. Since 2009, Buzzsprout has helped over 300,000 people launch their own podcasts. Buzzsprout walks you step by step through the whole process and will give you powerful tools to start, grow, and monetize your podcast. Ready to get started? Click the link in the show notes to get our free step-by-step guide to starting your podcast today.
Have you ever found yourself puzzled, wondering if cryptocurrency is just a fleeting trend, a scam, or perhaps the future? Hi, I'm Dr. Tanya Evans, and I'm here to introduce you to my new book, Digital Money Demystified, Your Ultimate Guide to Deciphering the Crypto Maze. As a legal policy and crypto education expert, I've crafted this book to cut through the chaos, debunk the myths, and tackle the FUD, that's fear, uncertainty, and doubt. From captivating headlines to meticulously sourced data, I guide you through the promises and the pitfalls of digital assets. With 12 chapters and 10 myths dispelled, Digital Money Demystified is designed for investors, business owners, and professionals eager to navigate the digital economy. It's more than just a book. It's a tool for economic empowerment that directs you safely and confidently from cash to crypto. Say goodbye to bewilderment and hello to enlightenment. Transform from crypto curious to confident. Sidestep those scammers and embrace the future of work, wealth, and creativity. Grab your copy of Digital Money Demystified today at the book's companion website, digitalmoneydemystified.com, or wherever books are sold. This is the right book, the right voice at the right time. Don't miss out on the digital revolution. Stop by digitalmoneydemystified.com now. Yeah, so let's pivot to the CPA side of this. And when I think about first entering the space and the first tokens and coins beyond Bitcoin, beyond ETH, taking the L's, as you said in the beginning, oh, hey, mom coin, I'm not even a mom. I don't know why I bought that. I want my ETH back. I'm coming for you. You know, we make all of these decisions, but I also remember how it wasn't challenging for me to keep up with record keeping at the time, because I'm not a day or swing trader. I was buying and understanding what it meant to hold for a long term, kicking the tires, things of that nature. As I started to acquire, or at least consider, different assets beyond Bitcoin and beyond ETH, and we see kind of the saber rattling and the regulation by enforcement from the Securities Exchange Commission in particular, and the general hostility from the current administration around crypto assets, because it used to not be a thing until it's a thing. I often compare it actually just to the evolution of hip hop. I feel like I need to write some type of law review article, because nobody is checking for it until it becomes a thing. And here we are again, could actually learn lessons from the evolution of hip hop when nobody cared until people cared. And then I also talk about the gentrification of genius. I have an article around that in the NFT space. That is not a phrase that I coined. Came from Jesse Williams when he won, I think it was a BET award. And he stood up and he was concerned about the gentrification of genius in the way that we see gentrification in neighborhoods and capital assets in the form of homes. We see that with our intellectual property. So I was critically concerned about that. So that's kind of like the background. Where I started was the fact that how challenging it was early on to keep pace with record keeping, not for someone like me that was the occasional and kind of learning, but someone who at the end of the year, you got to pay the boss.
Yeah.
You got to pay not our boss, but a boss if you choose to participate in this economy and this society and kind of this the shared contract of what we buy into, then you must participate or you pay the consequence. It's really challenging then. It's better, but not ideal now. Talk about the challenges of purchasing crypto assets in the United States in particular, and what hazards people need to look out for when they start purchasing, when they start accumulating, when they start trading or selling, what the taxable consequences might be and how that all plays into record keeping.
I'm going to give a personal story and then I'll talk about the regulations. So I remember in late 2019, early 2020, I was actually creating a masterclass on cryptocurrencies, Bitcoin, taxes. I had put so much work into this and I was using Binance.com, and out of nowhere, regulators say, hey, Binance.com, you can no longer use it in the United States. You have to use Binance.us. And literally, I had to cancel like some of the classes because I was using Binance and I didn't have a secondary. That was the only thing I knew. And now they were closing it. So I was like, man, this is terrible. When it comes to record keeping, you know, you're supposed to keep track of every single transaction. Not all of the exchanges keep track. Sometimes exchanges shut down. Sometimes you can no longer go on the website. I personally had staked coins on that Binance.com, but I couldn't unstake it, you know, before the time period. So I don't really know where it's at. Hopefully, maybe I can
someday,
you know, fly somewhere and get them back. I don't know how much is in there. I have no idea. But it's one of those things where keeping track of the coins was hard enough for most people. Then to try to keep track of the record keeping was even harder. And the exchanges don't do it. And because you had this mentality that the government can't tax crypto, they didn't create it, they can't tax it. You had a lot of rebellious people at that time.
Right.
And so, you know, I look at that time period, I'm like, look, that's why the Biden passed the law, you know, for the infrastructure bill. And it said the majority of the infrastructure is going to be paid using additional tax enforcement and cryptocurrency. And it's like, yeah, because they know that during that time period, that 2017 time period, that 2020 time period, you know, whenever those huge booms, people were making off and not paying any taxes. And so in 2019, they came out with a question that basically asked if you had been in digital assets, but it was on Schedule 1 of the tax return.
Right.
Not many people paid attention to it. They brought it to the front page for 2020, 21, 22, 23. Every year they've changed the wording just a little bit to be more specific. And then every year it feels like they've added additional forms that have that question. So S corporations, C corporations, trusts. Now they're trying to see everybody, all right. entities. Hey, stop putting your crypto in a business, which is what I've been recommending people. It feels like a lot of those loopholes or different strategies that we were using, they're closing them up one by one by one. And so like in the past, I think that we've actually been in a good position tax-wise. I feel like no wash rule and no 1099s coming our way. It was so flexible. You just had to actually care and try. But those people who didn't try, those people who put no and they'd been in, you know, in these exchanges, I warned them that just wait until the IRS really has the technology to do this on a massive scale. They've already added AI to the audit process. They've added billions of dollars with this administration. They are attacking crypto. I don't know what else more I could say outside of just me building my own business. And when it happens, just be there for them. Because, hey, check that box yes if you're in crypto and try to report all your transactions on 8949. At least try. You know what I mean? If it's not perfect, they only have a 3-year window to audit you. But when it's evasion or fraud, it's infinite.
Right.
Try.
And it's critically important to understand that just because, you know, there were so many people who believed, as you said earlier, that this is money that is or value that is created outside of a government issued or sanctioned currency and asset, and therefore we fill in our own rules. And it just never made sense to me, even before I knew what the rules were. It was my obviously intuition and training as a lawyer. It's like, that doesn't make sense. Even, and correct me if I'm wrong, even ill-gotten gains are still taxed. It's, right? It's like, it might be illegal. And we're not talking about crypto being illegal. It certainly is not. But that's how far reaching this idea and concept of income goes for the purposes of income tax.
Yeah, so I got Al Capone.
Right, right. Yeah. And it's, you know, it's so super serious. And when I think about, you know, I was just working on an article right now. So I've been reading or rereading The Whiteness of Wealth by Professor Dorothy Brown at Emory Law School, right? And she talks about how racist the revenue code is and how it hamstrings Black people in particular. And so I started to think, what does that mean when we talk about the wealth building opportunities by accumulating crypto assets and capital gains and losses, right? But people don't get wealthy off of high income since it's taxed at a higher rate. We're talking about creating assets that have a return on investments that create wealth that we can have and then sustain through succession, right? And Professor Brown talks about the whiteness of wealth and how the cards are stacked against Black and Brown folks in the code itself, feature not a bug. And so what that means for the fact, I did a little research, and if you have more information, please help me and the listeners. But it appears that Black folks in general are audited at a higher rate, even with fewer assets. I don't know if it's easier. I don't know. I don't have the statistics in front of me. I tend to want to see the statistics to be able to talk about them. But just because I'm doing this research right now, it's kind of at the fore of my mind. And so I'm concerned with those who, unaware, are moving into the space, probably investing for the first time. If we rely on statistics like the that Ariel Schwab report that came out in 2022 for the first time on Black crypto investors. The data, how they skewed it, in my opinion, their conclusions are a bit hysterical in the sense that it aligns with, don't worry about your pretty little head about the crypto, come and make sure you invest in stocks. And I'm saying it's a both and strategy. And if you really want to significantly make strides, you certainly have to have a balanced portfolio, but try making up 300 years doing the things that you've always done. That's just not going to work. So I think that we do a disservice to our community when we say, don't do this, only do this in a system that hasn't served us well to date. So it's a long way around the bend to even just frame how folks who do not, like, we literally have to follow the letter of the law and within. And still, that doesn't always work out well. But the things that people should look out for to make sure that they're giving the best faith effort, the good faith effort that you have always talked, as long as I've known you. You're like, do the best you can, because there are enough people not doing that, that will take up all of the time. Give your best good faith effort. There are better tools now in 2024 when you think of all the trackers. I'm going to holler at me if you want to, you know, kind of be an advertiser on the show. We're not going to drop names. But there are a number of those now that make it easier and also automate the creation of the form that you mentioned. Is it 80? What is it again?
8949.
That, because a lot of people, I think, are used to receiving 1099s, maybe 1099K. But that's not going to be sufficient. You need the other one. And I don't think people know that. Talk about what is necessary for the good faith effort.
Yeah. So I'm going to address everything you just mentioned.
Okay.
So first, stocks itself. Understand that when it comes to stocks, by the time that we are able to invest into it, there have already typically been multiple rounds of investments that have come out.
That's a good point.
And legally, unless you are an accredited investor, you cannot get into stocks at a certain round unless you're like friends and family. And so to me, that's like one of those like grandfather clauses, basically, where it's like, hey, you could get in only if you have a certain amount of money. And it's one of those things where it's like, well, if you have taken the wealth from our communities and now you're saying it's equal, which it is outside of you have to be an accredited investor.
Right.
Well, it's like, well, why would you make that law? And they say, well, it's to protect you. And so crypto came out and crypto was like, look, everybody can get on the ICO. Everybody can get in at the very beginning. And so you saw a huge amount of people, Black people that got into it and make a ton of money. Mm-hmm. Now, the education side is problematic because the way that the tax code is written, tax season means something different for different people. If you are a low income earner, tax season is a great time because you get all these refundable credits. So the government actually pays you to have a certain lifestyle. If you get the earned income credit, literally, you could pay zero taxes all year and still get money from tax season. I see it all the time. So tax season for low income people is a great time. Tax season for middle class people is just another thing for them to do. Okay, we get a couple $100s. Woohoo! Like, I got 3 kids, a family. I can't get any more money. How come this person without a job? And they're comparing their refunds to the person without a job with all the kids, you know? And so it's just another thing. Rich people get taxed the worst. The doctors, you know, the lawyers, you know, lawyers aren't even allowed to take QBI, not go into that, but rich people get taxed the worst. Then you have wealthy people.
Well,
these are people who don't work for their money. These people just earn dividends, interest, things of that nature. They're taxed at a lower rate than everybody else.
Right.
And so, unfortunately, when you get a lot of Black Americans who have been in that low income time period, and they're thinking tax season is a great time, and all of a sudden they get into that rich category, they're like, whoa, I got to pay taxes? Mm-hmm. I thought the government gives us taxes.
Right.
And so there's less than 1% of CPAs are Black. Not only is it difficult for us to get into the investments first, it's hard for us to find the CPAs that look like us.
Absolutely.
Because that CPA exam, I'm not going to get into it, but it's absolutely ridiculous. It's so many barriers to entry that, I mean, I just thank God every day. I'm like, hey, I made it, but that was God. That wasn't really me. Like, I did my part, but I know very well that, you know, I don't have an ego in that because I know God helped me. He did something. He was like, here, son, you got something. So then you have that. And then when we talk about the IRS and the tax audits, it's not that they're going after Black people the most. It's the way the whole system works in the sense that they know that they give money out to low-income people. And those credits, because any human, when you see, oh, I can just press a button or say a couple words and I can get a bunch of money, it's a temptation for people.
Right.
And for people who are hungry, for people who are needing that, or even lazy people, people who need, who want that money, that upfront money, that quick, without thinking long term, they'll just put in numbers. They'll just do certain things. They'll commit fraud just to get it. And that goes with all races. But I think the percentage is higher in the Black community simply because if you look at 13% of America, if that's Black America, well, let's look at the low income percentage. And I don't know what that is, but let's just say it's 25%. That would be the difference between why Black people get audited more. But also, a lot of these wealthy people, they hire CPAs just like me. People look at Trump and they're like, he paid no taxes. Well, he also paid over $1 million to a CPA. You could see it clearly right there on his tax return that he paid professional services over $1 million. So if you pay me over $1 million, I'm going to make sure that you don't have to pay taxes also.
Fair.
So that's the way the game is played. And most people in our communities have no idea the levels. They're just used to playing at one level or maybe two, but there's at least like 9 levels.
Right. Before we get out of here, I was just dealing with this issue in preparation for my law students. Next week is our module on the taxation of crypto assets. And of course, with that, looking at the most recent 1040, you mentioned the check the box that we've been watching for the last few years, how, you know, moving it not just to the first page of the 1040, but what we call like the above the fold. And I told the students, basically, it's like the second most important thing, whether or not you have any connection to crypto assets. We have name, we have address, we have, you know, like filing status, and did you have blah, 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 blah. Like the wording has changed, but they're getting more specific. I think they're reading our tweets. So y'all stop tweeting about this. And then after that, it's like, dependence. And I told the students, whether or not you have any connection to crypto is more important than your children. That's how serious this is right now. What are the issues that you see, the changes? Maybe there's some regulations that are percolating or have recently come that have been on your radar that we want people to be aware of as they start preparing for 2024, since 2023 is already in the bag.
Yeah, so there's a lot of stuff that's still up in the air, but I'm gonna give you some solid stuff and then some stuff that's not. So first, if you owned a business before 2024, by the end of 2024, you have to report it to FinCEN. It's called BOI. Essentially, if you were benefiting from a business, then you're supposed to report that. I know a lot of people, before this rule is in place, you would get like a corporation, maybe in like a Wyoming or Delaware, just somewhere where it's anonymous, Wyoming, especially if you had like DAOs and things of that nature.
Right.
So, you know, then you don't have to report who you are. And so it was just anonymous. And the government's like, no, we're not dealing with that anymore. You have to report if you've been benefiting off a business. If you open a business in 2024, I forget the exact amount of days, but I think it's like 30 days that you have to report to FinCEN. So make sure that you research that, because I've been telling people to have their long-term crypto in one business and their short-term in a separate business for strategy purposes. But now that that rule's in place, we're still going to keep doing that, but now you just have to report it. Then you have this law where they're trying to make all the brokerages give out 11 1099 DAs for digital assets. You had mentioned 1099K. That's the wrong form, but that's the form a lot of them were giving out.
Right.
1099 miscellaneous, wrong form, but that's what they were giving out. It's supposed to be a 1099B, and now they've changed it from B to a DA. But because it's almost impossible to get this information the way it is right now, they postponed that a year. Same with cash. So if me and you do a transaction with cash that's over 10,000, legally we have to report it within, I think, like 15 days on a form 8300 to the IRS. And then they had said, okay, we're going to extend that to digital assets as well. But then it was too difficult. And so they pushed that back as well. So, you know, we have all these different things going on, and who knows how it all plays out. Strategy perspective, we're trying to see if the wash rule stays like not a rule, because that allows us to legally not pay taxes most of the time. It's great to not have that law, but that's looking like is eventually going to be put into place. But how can they track it?
And let me pause right there, because a lot of people who aren't savvy in terms of investing don't know about the wash rule. And so my understanding, and kind of give the high level around, if you have a loss, then selling and reacquiring that asset years in, and you can reset your basis and count that as a capital loss. On the stock side, there is a period of time you have to wait before you reacquire that does not today apply to crypto assets. And that was a major opportunity in the crypto space. And you imagine that's going to go away. Is that accurate?
Yeah, I hope it doesn't. But in my mind, it's only a matter of time. The better I am as a CPA by preventing my clients from legally paying taxes, the more they're going to try to change the rules, because at the end of the day, they still want their money. So it's like, hey, we follow the rules. They're like, okay, you did. We're going to change
these rules.
Now pay us our money. Yeah, so that's how that works. But yeah, the wash rule in stocks, essentially you buy, let's just say Apple, and Apple goes down. You sell it for a loss, but then it starts to go back up and you're like, oh, I still want to buy it. You rebuy it, but if it wasn't a certain amount of days, basically that loss becomes null and void. It acts like it never happened. In the crypto space, I tend to love dips, because I tell most of my clients, hey, if you bought it above this price, if it's lower, go ahead and sell it so that we could take some, you know, get some losses in there, because short-term losses offset short-term gains, long-term losses offset long-term gains. So if you're able to, you know, give yourself a whole bunch of losses, you know, then later on, maybe in December, if it goes up, you could take some gains and come out tax-free. And you still have all your coins, because most of the time you sell it and you rewrite back, buy it back within like a couple minutes. it's on the blockchain. You can see the transaction. You're following the rules. You just may not like it. So that's why they're probably going to change that rule.
I love it. We're not going to give away all your secrets, and I'm going to get you back to the good work of saving the world. Look, the idea is to pay every cent of tax that you owe and not one penny more. And that requires working with the best professionals. And CJ, the smart guy, CJ Kelly, is that man. Where can people learn more about you and your services? And don't take my space, y'all, but it fills up quickly. This is a very busy man. He has a good team, but there's only so many people. So you better get at it or start preparing for 2024. Where can people learn more about you and your good work, sir?
Yeah, I appreciate you. You can go to like cjthesmartguy.com/links. And there you'll be able to see like all my different links, as well as on all social media platforms at cjthesmartguy. No extra letters, numbers, dashes, anything like that. Instagram, I've got the verified so that, you know, people don't get caught up, because there's nothing worse than somebody calling you, friend, family member, who just believes that it's you and, you know, they lost some money. So just be very careful. CJ the smart guy, no extra letters, numbers, punctuation. Yes, that's the easiest place to find me. YouTube, Twitter, LinkedIn, Instagram, Threads, all of them.
You name it. Right. Perfect. I thank you so much for your wisdom and your counsel. And I'm glad to be connected with you and connected in the empowerment lane to make sure we get this right. I feel like we all we got, and we have to stay connected and keep nation building. So I appreciate you. And until the next time, folks, definitely head on over to cjthesmartguy.com. His links are there, his link tree, the services, questions, comments, concerns, discussion items. You can get all of that and more. Let's figure this out. You don't have to do all the things, but you have to do something. And that starts today, to educate and empower yourself so that you are prepared for the future of work and of wealth and of innovation. CJ, I appreciate you.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you so much for listening to the Tech Intersect podcast. I hope you enjoyed this episode. If you love it, please tell the world. If not, go ahead and tell me. And in either case, drop a comment or ping me on social media at IPProfEvans with the hashtag TechIntersect. And finally, a quick reminder on digital safety. There are a lot of scammers out there impersonating me and others, and I need your help. Now hear this, and remember, I will never slide into your DMs to say peace and blessings or hey, and I will never reach out to solicit your time or your money on social media, like ever. I'm not a trader. I am an educator and an attorney licensed in 4 states. Thank you very much. I'm here to inform, inspire, and empower. No cap, and definitely no Forex. So be careful, make good choices, and remember, I developed an entire free masterclass about the topic of digital safety in the crypto space. So check out secureyourcryptobag.com for more information. That's secureyourcryptobag.com. All right, that's all for this episode. Until next time, continue to shine.